Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. We're not taking live calls. However, we invite you to stay with us and enjoy the broadcast. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello and welcome. Happy to have you with us here at Catholic Answers Live, despite the fact that we can't take calls today because we're pre-recording this show. But we are it's a real treat, I think, what we're going to present to you today. So I hope you will enjoy it. I am Cy Kellett, your host. And this special treat is connected to, a miracle, I would say. It seemed a miracle at the time, and perhaps even more so today, the miraculous end of Soviet communism. In the years since the 1989 collapse of the Soviet world, more and more evidence has emerged about the role of Pope John Paul II and that he played. And there's certainly no question about the role U.S. President Ronald Reagan played in those stunning, really world-transformative days. But did they work together? Did they see one another as friends? And what significance did their relationship have for the rest of the world? To help us remember those days and to connect the miracle of the fall of the Soviets to our Catholic faith, Dr. Paul Kengor is here with us today. Dr. Kengor is professor of political science and executive director of the Center for Vision and Values at Grove City College. And he's author of a whole bunch of books, I think 11 or 12, I'll ask him. But his latest book, A Pope and a President, John Paul II, Ronald Reagan, and the Extraordinary Untold Story of the 20th Century. Dr. Kengor, thanks for being with us.
Cy, it's so good to finally be on with you. How are you?
I'm very well. Is it 11 or 12 books? What are we up to? I mean, it's a...
I think it's over a dozen. I honestly haven't counted. I always tell people it's not the quantity, it's the quality that matters.
Well, then you're doing well with this. And I think it's being very well received, the book, A Pope and a President. And your general area usually includes Ronald Reagan. Would you say that's your kind of focus of your writing career?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I've done probably, I think, at least a half a dozen books just on Ronald Reagan. I did a book on Ronald Reagan's closest advisor, Bill Clark. That was published through my good friends at Ignatius Press. That came out about 10 years ago. The other books have largely been in the area of communism, the Cold War. So really, Cy, this is a book that I started filing FOIA, Freedom of Information Act requests, for documents related to this book and this Reagan-John Paul II relationship back in 2000. So I can tell you that all of those dozen or so books that I've done, I've actually done in the process during the time at which I've been researching and cobbling together this one.
They are so connected, even by the kind of circumstances of their high office, I suppose, if you wanted to say it. They come into their positions very close together within about 2 years of one another. Both are shot early in their presidencies, early in their times in office. And
sure.
I wonder, did they ever talk about that, the shooting? Did they talk about what they thought might be the significance of that?
Well, they sure did, and I'll back up just a little bit. In 1976, Ronald Reagan ran for president against Gerald Ford, and he tried to take the Republican nomination away from Gerald Ford, which was a big deal. I mean, Ford was the incumbent, and Ronald Reagan's famous 11th commandment was, "Thou shalt not speak ill of another Republican," right?
Right.
But he ran against Gerald Ford. He almost unseated him for the party's nomination in Kansas City that year, August 1976. Ford, of course, got the nomination. Nomination, went on to lose to Jimmy Carter. And speaking of sort of divine plan, how things work out, Michael Reagan, Ronald Reagan's son, has told me this a bunch of times. He said he ran into Margaret Thatcher at one point. I guess this would have been maybe 10, 15 years ago. And Thatcher said to him, "Too bad your father didn't win in 1976. We could have gotten together even sooner than we did." And Michael Reagan said, no. If he had won in 76, John Paul II would have come in after him rather than before him. Mikhail Gorbachev wouldn't have come in at all, even if Ronald Reagan had won two terms into 1984, because Gorbachev came in March 1985. Ronald Reagan would have had Yuri Andropov to deal with.
Oh.
So, you know, Ronald Reagan believed, he had this very strong sense of God's plan, the divine plan, the DP, as he and Bill Clark called it. They actually used that acronym, the DP, the Divine Plan. Ronald Reagan's mother had really drilled this into him as a boy, about Disciples of Christ, Protestant denomination, that God has a plan for things. And the bad thing that happens to you now, you're losing in 1976, good is going to come out of this. And so really, the time for Reagan was 1980, and that followed John Paul II being chosen October 16th, 1978. I mean, the first non-Italian pope in 455 years, the first Slavic pope ever, and from right smack out of the heart of the communist bloc. Margaret Thatcher came in 1979, and then when Ronald Reagan came in 1980, by that point, John Paul II had gone to Poland for his historic 9 days in June 1979. So Reagan saw all of that timing as perfect, as not just coincidental, but as literal divine planning by divine providence.
And our listener might say, well, especially maybe the young who don't remember, well, why would God be so bothered about this? I mean, what is, and you have a chapter four of your book, The Satanic Scourge of Communism. So before we even get into the role these men played together in the destruction of communism, could you say something about the Satanic Scourge, what in fact that was?
Yeah, and I'm so glad you brought this up, because this really is very, very powerful. And this was one of the things, Cy, that when I was Protestant, before I converted to the Catholic Church in April 2005, one of the things that really struck me about the Catholic Church, because I come to all of this as a Cold War researcher. I mean, that's been my career, I guess, maybe my vocation, if you will, since the early 1990s when I was in graduate school. I started reading the Catholic Church's encyclicals on communism, Divini Redemptoris, which came out in 1931. Way back, there was another Qui Pluribus that came out in 1846. That was 2 years before the Communist Manifesto even came out. When I saw the Catholic Church was warning about in regard to communism in an encyclical published in 1846, yeah. I mean, 2 years before Marx and Engels even published the manifesto, the church had all this figured out as if they had a crystal ball. And I was blown away by that. It was one of the things that made me think twice as a Protestant. I thought, you know, these guys in Rome claim that they have this magisterium led by this pope and college of cardinals and bishops and so forth, and that the Holy Spirit speaks revealed truths to this magisterium over time. That's quite a claim to make. But when I was reading just how prophetic these documents were, how they nailed everything, how communism would attack religion, property, even the family.
Yeah.
When I saw all of that, as a Protestant, I thought, there's got to be something to this Catholic thing. These guys are right. They were right about this long before anyone I could think, like a Billy Graham,
right,
or Fred Schwartz or Richard Wurmbrand or C.S. Lewis or any of the people in the Protestant world.
And many of the world's intellectuals, say, in the late 19th century, kind of poo-pooed the Catholic position. It was considered there's a lack of progressivism there among those Catholics.
Well, they sure did, and you know, I've got from the 1846 encyclical, I got this line right in front of me. This is an amazing statement, and Our Lady of Fatima would basically predict precisely this sort of thing when she talked about the errors and the persecutions that communism would unleash. She said that, of course, in 1917. But this 1846 encyclical, speaking of communism, it says, "It is a filthy medley of errors which creeps in from every side. Morals will be deteriorated. Christ's most holy religion will be despised. The majesty of divine worship will be rejected. The power of this apostolic see plundered. The authority of the church attacked. The rights of bishops trampled on." I mean, this is amazing. This is 1846. And listen to this, Cy. "The sanctity of marriage infringed. The rule of every government violently shaken, and many other losses for both the Christian and civil commonwealth." They go on and on in 1846 making statements about this, and you know, that was just the first of In this chapter, I lay out at least 12 church documents from 1846 to about 1937 foreseeing all of this. And then the errors would come. The communists would attack bishops, cardinals. They, we'll get to this, they would try to assassinate John Paul II, and before they even tried to physically assassinate John Paul II, they succeeded in the character assassination of Pope Pius XII, who right. they were the first ones to label Hitler's pope. Pope Paul VI, they attacked everybody. I mean, it's harder to find. So that word that the church used, the satanic scourge of communism, I think it's fully justified.
And especially, I really feel sensitive about sharing this with our younger listeners. The maybe 100 million people murdered, not wars around the world, torture, starvation on mass scales as a consequence of this. And am I exaggerating there, or is that about the picture?
If anything, you're understating it, but no, you're right to use the figure 100 million. That's used by the Harvard University Press book, The Black Book of Communism. It's the number used by the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. But one flaw in that number, they estimate that Stalin's Soviet Union, actually the Soviet Union en masse, killed, I think, only about 20 to 25 million. I say only, 20 to 25 million. We now think that the Soviet Union, Alexander Yakovlev in his Yale University press book, he was Gorbachev's number one aide. He was given the job of literally trying to count the skulls. He says that Stalin alone killed 60 to 70 million. Alexander Solzhenitsyn said that Stalin killed 60 to 70 million. And we now know that the Chinese under Mao killed at least 70 million. So really, Cy, the number's probably more like 140 million. And, you know, people, I hope these numbers just don't start running by people's heads, but let me give you a sense of comparison. We lost 300,000 dead boys in World War II. All right.
Yes.
And everybody has an uncle who died in World War II. You take all of the total dead killed in World War I and World War II, add them together, and then double them, and you're not even close to the number of people that the communists killed. So if there was a greater scourge out there in the 20th century, I want to know what it is. And it's precisely Ronald Reagan, who saw it in Hollywood, and in Hollywood, he didn't see it as bad as John Paul II saw it in Poland, where his friends were killed by the communists. So for these two, they believed this was truly an evil empire, as Reagan put it, that had to be taken down and defeated.
And we have to take a break, Dr. Kengor, but just one thing to set the stage before we talk about these two coming onto the world stage at roughly the same time. In about 1980, or the late 70s, early 80s, no one saw Soviet communism as vulnerable. It, in many ways, was certainly the world's greatest problem at the time. Ronald Reagan later called it the evil empire. But it did not appear vulnerable at the time that these two men entered their offices.
Well, it's true, at least to a lot of people. Certainly academic Sovietologists felt that way. And really, it's probably Ronald Reagan and John Paul II among a very few who believe that it could actually be taken down. And Reagan, I give this blow by blow in the book. Richard V. Allen was there. He was sitting next to Reagan at the time. Allen was Catholic. He's still around. Went to Notre Dame, and he was sitting with Ronald Reagan in his office in California in 1979. Reagan is an ex-governor at that point. He wasn't president yet, and he was watching footage of John Paul II in Poland. They were watching it together on TV. And Allen said, "I looked at Reagan. There were tears in his eyes." And Reagan said, That's it. The Pope is the key." He said, "Dick, we got to get elected. We need to reach out to this Pope and the Vatican and make them an ally." Because Reagan believed that they could actually not just contain the Soviet Union, but roll back, reverse, and defeat the Soviet Union, not by nuking them, not by going to war with them. In fact, what he and John Paul II were all about was finding every possible combination, dozens of them, to try to slice and dice the Soviet Empire where they can defeat them without firing a shot, without firing a missile. And that's what they endeavored to do together.
Paul Kengor is our guest. We are discussing the Pope and a President, his latest book, Extraordinary Time in History, an extraordinary book to take a look at it. More on their joint careers when we come back on Catholic Answers Live.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at Catholic.com.
As legend tells it, 500 years ago, a disaffected Augustinian priest nailed his 95 theses to the door of the Wittenberg Cathedral. The evidence that he actually did this is pretty thin, but Martin Luther's objections to Catholic teachings concerning purgatory and indulgences set off a series of countless ruptures that the Church suffers to this very day. The faithful Catholic wants to be God's instrument in healing these ruptures, but may not know where to begin. Join us this September 28th to 30th as we tackle the topic at Catholic Answers' 4th National Apologetics Conference, the Reunion of All Christians, a lively and inspiring conference designed to ignite and inform your faith. We've got an all-star lineup of speakers guaranteed to fire you up. Catholic historian Steve Weidenkopf, apologist Mark Brumley, apologist Devin Rose, plus all of your favorite Catholic Answers apologists. This is an event you don't want to miss. This is where it all begins. Join us this September for a conference that is sure to leave you wanting more. Seats are still available, but they're going fast. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 1-888-291-8000 today to register. That's CatholicAnswersConference.com.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is that now there is. Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking new resource by apologist Trent Horn. That one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into or back to the practice of the Catholic faith. Don't miss out on the most important, life-changing book to come along in years. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
We're not taking live calls. However, we invite you to stay with us and enjoy the broadcast. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. So happy to have you with us today. The book we are discussing, A Pope and a President, John Paul II, Ronald Reagan, and the Extraordinary Untold Story of the 20th Century. We could probably do a full hour. Dr. Paul Kengor is our guest. Dr. Kengor, just on why it's an untold story, and I think part of it has to do with there weren't very many people who wanted to tell the truth while it was happening. But
and it's a forgotten history, too. Yeah, all of this.
Yeah.
What you're telling me about. I mean, Catholics don't even know a lot of this stuff, and you know, Divini Redemptoris said that the Church had called public attention to the perils of communism more frequently and more effectively than any other public authority on earth. And if you think that's just, I know you don't, but if you think, if someone would think that's just the Church patting itself on the back, Whitaker Chambers said that in the 1950s. People notice the Catholic Church has been on the right side of this issue stronger and more effectively than any other institution in history, period.
Right. That's absolutely right. Amen to that. I wonder if I usually ask people about this who know a lot about communism, but in many ways, communism was, in the way that the Antichrist is Antichrist, it was an anti-church. As if it were a church without Christ.
Well, that's absolutely right, and the Church actually referred to it as an antichrist. In fact, so did Fulton Sheen. Fulton Sheen put it that way as well. And in fact, the exact quote from Sheen, I have it right here. He said, "They will have chosen those who decide to ally with the Soviet communists." He said, "They will have chosen the comradeship and antichrist." They can devour anything that is not brotherhood in Christ. Communism, he said, was inspired not by the spirit of Christ, quote, but by the spirit of the serpent, the mystical body of the Antichrist, unquote.
Wow.
So Fulton Sheen was saying that kind of stuff in the 30s. And by the way, for the record, Fulton Sheen grew up just down the road from where Ronald Reagan grew up. And I wasn't able to pin this down, Cy. I would love to know. but I would bet money that Ronald Reagan, one day with his Catholic dad and his devoutly Catholic brother, when the family was driving through Peoria for the 100th time, surely went into one of the churches in Peoria, Illinois, and I bet Fulton Sheen was in there preaching. I asked Nancy Reagan, do you know if Ronnie and Fulton Sheen ever met? She said, I don't. She said, I would bet that they did, and they probably did, but I don't know. But Ronald Reagan certainly at least knew about him. Sorry, I don't get off on a tangent, but you're Antichrist, you know, that too. The church saw that. They understood that.
Right. And so now maybe to kind of set the stage a little bit more, what were the formative experiences for both Carol Wojtyła, who became Pope John Paul II, and Ronald Reagan in their understanding of communism and their development of this ferocious anti-communism? How did that come about in each man?
Well, Ronald Reagan learned it as early as the 1920s when he was going to the Disciples of Christ denomination on Hennepin Avenue in Little Dixon, Illinois. His mentor was the pastor, a man named Ben Cleaver. Reagan was so close to the pastor, he actually dated the pastor's daughter. Muggs Cleaver, Margaret Cleaver was her name. And Reagan first learned his anti-communism back then. And Ronald Reagan's mother headed the missions committee at the church. And I actually found in the old records of the church, they kept written records of everything in those days, that Nell Reagan actually brought in a Russian Jew in the late 1920s to talk to the congregation about persecution under the Bolsheviks. So he would have heard this early on. He was an FDR Democrat in the 30s and 40s. He called himself a hemophiliac liberal, a bleeding heart liberal. but he realized, Cy, that as he put it, an after dinner speaker speaking to various progressive and liberal groups, that a lot of these progressive and liberal groups were actually run by closet communists. People like John Howard Lawson and Dalton Trumbo, two members of the Hollywood Ten who were closet Communist Party members who joined the party and pledged a loyalty oath to Stalin's Soviet Union. And when Reagan realized how he was being used by those guys who were calling themselves liberals and progressives, but really were communists dedicated to the USSR, Reagan was aghast. He was horrified. And for him, that began his move away from the left, and also realizing as head of the Screen Actors Guild in Hollywood, how he saw how the communists were trying to hijack the actors' unions in Hollywood. So that's how Reagan came to this in the 40s and 50s. Meanwhile, reading the headlines and learning about how bad atheistic communism was. For John Paul II, it was entirely different. Carol Wojtyła, he actually lived it. I mean, he went from occupation under the Nazis, and the Nazis had killed his Jewish friends, his priest friends, to an immediate occupation and takeover by the Red Army, who then killed his friends as well. So what Ronald Reagan called the martyred nation of Poland, Carol Wojtyła actually lived that martyrdom in Poland.
And then what was the progress for it? So am I correct that the Pope, Pope John Paul II, went to seminary during the Second World War, or was it immediately after?
Yeah, he did. And he was in seminary, and at the time when he, in fact, I'm trying to remember exactly where it was the name of the church, but he felt a sort of divine protection. It's kind of amazing that the communists didn't get to him. They actually came, ran through the church, looked for other seminarians. I mean, it was really the Soviets were worse toward religion than the Nazis were, but he had attended an underground seminary in Krakow, and I think this would have been, Cy, in the fall of 1942. Oh. And so at that point, the Nazis had come in. They invaded September 1st, 1939. And so 3 years later, when the Warsaw Ghetto is still the Warsaw Ghetto, mm-hmm. Auschwitz, which was not far from Krakow, Auschwitz, Nazis had been sending Jews there. It was he basically went to an underground seminary that operated in the utmost secrecy while the Nazis were occupying Poland. And he tried to tell his friends when the Red Army came in to, quote-unquote, liberate Poland, that he said, look, yeah, the Nazis were horrible, but if you think that this is going to be a cheerful liberation, so you got this wrong, because these guys actually probably hate religion even more than the Nazis did. The Nazis were insane killer pagans with their eyes especially on Jews and ethnic cleansing. He said these guys, on the other hand, are killer totalitarians who murder you according to class and according to religion also. In fact, Fulton Sheen said, you know, what ethnicity is to the Nazis, class is to the Soviets. But both are killers and both are antichrist.
A Pope and a President is the book. John Paul II, Ronald Reagan, and the Extraordinary Untold Story of the 20th Century. Its author, Professor Paul Kengor, is our guest this hour. We'll be right back with more on Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, this is Father Robert Spitzer, president of the Majus Center of Reason and Faith, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
We've all heard the words at the end of Mass,
"Go forth and announce the gospel of the Lord."
But how exactly are you to do that? In his new book, The Old Evangelization, How to Spread the Faith Like Jesus Did, apologist Eric Sammons takes you back to the source, taking a look at what Jesus did when he preached the good news and drawing out the lessons he taught us. All evangelization begins with a personal encounter, and so Sammons examines Jesus' most instructive gospel encounters and discovers within each a particular truth that even 2,000 years later can help us make new disciples. Evangelization is not an option, but Christ's express command. What better way to answer this call than by imitating his supreme example? Order your copy of The Old Evangelization today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Atheists have a new tactic when it comes to talking about the existence of God. Your arguments in favor of God don't even deserve a reply, they say. Because not only does God not exist, he doesn't even matter. In his new DVD, Why God Still Matters, apologist Carlo Broussard doesn't let them off so easy. He takes apart the premises of those who say God's irrelevant and teaches you what you need to demonstrate why God is just as important. In fact, in today's world, more important than ever. Don't let atheists shut down the argument before it begins. Get your copy of Why God Still Matters by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo airs weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific. Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo is a daily live call-in program covering news throughout the Catholic community, a wide range of social issues, and how we can make a difference. And right after Catholic Answers Live today, Raymond Arroyo covers a wide variety of political and cultural topics of interest to Catholics and other people of faith on the world over with Raymond Arroyo, right here on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Welcome back to Catholic Answers. Cy Kellett, your host, our guest, Dr. Paul Kengor, the author of a brand new book, a fascinating book, one that I hope you will take the opportunity to pick up. Maybe make a good Father's Day present. I think Father's Day is coming up, and this would make a great one. A Pope and a President. It's all about the intertwined histories of Pope John Paul II, now Pope St. John Paul II, and Ronald Reagan, and the extraordinary untold story of the 20th century. You mentioned before we went to the break, and I just want to continue with a sense of how these two men were kind of formed. It's just so clear with the Pope why he would be such a sturdy anti-communist, really. I mean, he experienced it at the ground level, which was horrific. He didn't experience it from thousands of miles away, as Ronald Reagan did, and many of his cohorts in Hollywood did. And you mentioned Dalton Trumbo, and I wanted to ask you about what was the atmosphere? I mean, I know they made this kind of glorifying movie about Dalton Trumbo recently, on almost a comedy, I guess. And
terrible.
And it's just horrifying to think that this person is being held up as a hero. Could you give us a little sense of maybe what Ronald Reagan was confronting in the 50s and 60s in Hollywood?
Sure, sure. Well, the people who joined the party, the Communist Party in the 30s and 40s. Now, most American communists were small-c communists who didn't actually join the party. But to actually join the party, I mean, that was a big deal. They took a loyalty oath, and the loyalty oath from the mid-1930s said this: I pledge myself to rally the masses to defend the Soviet Union. These are American communists. This is if you join Communist Party USA. Quote, I pledge myself to remain at all times a vigilant and firm defender of the Leninist line of the party, the only line that ensures the triumph of Soviet power in the United States, unquote. It was a very short two-sentence oath. They were committed to what their leader, William Z. Foster, called a Soviet America. And every single member of the Hollywood 10 was a card-carrying member of the American Communist Party. You know, Dalton Trumbo, who you mentioned, card number was 47187. 47187. And he said, he told people, he said, you must advance the party. You must advance the movement, the cause, through your work. John Howard Lawson was another one, and Lawson said, quote, as a writer, do not try to write an entire communist picture, but try to get 5 minutes of communist doctrine, 5 minutes of the party line in every script that you write, unquote. And Ronald Reagan saw this.
Yeah.
And Reagan used to speak to the groups of these guys.
Yeah.
And Reagan had this epiphany in his church, in his Presbyterian church in Hollywood one day, the Reverend Cleveland Kleihauer, where Reagan gave one of his hemophiliac liberal speeches denouncing fascism. This is 1947. And the Reverend came up to him and said, hey, Ron, great job. You know, those Nazis were really bad. But, you know, we defeated them. Hitler's been dead for 2 years now. There's no threat of Nazism in Europe. But the communists, Ron, or you listen to Churchill, they're taking over Europe. Maybe you ought to mention something about the threat of communists in this speech. And Reagan said, you know, good point, I should. And Reagan said the next time he gave that same after-dinner speech to the same group, instead of exiting to a standing ovation, he exited to glares.
Oh.
Because he now realized they wanted him denouncing totalitarianism when it was Nazism, but not totalitarianism when it was communism. And for Reagan, that was the wake-up call that eventually led him on his way to the anti-communist that he became.
And so now these two men become, these two powerful anti-communists become two of the world's most important leaders, President of the United States and Pope. They both are, attempts are made on their lives. The attempt on the Pope's life, you make quite clear in the book that there's a Soviet connection. Can you tell us a little bit about the attack on Pope John Paul II?
Yeah, so the attack on John Paul II, it was May 13th, 1981. You know, and everybody forgets Reagan was shot just 6 weeks before that, March 30th, 1981. Everyone remembers, Si, that they were both shot. Everyone forgets that they were shot only 6 weeks apart. And in the case of John Paul II, the shooter was a Muslim Turk named Mehmet Ali Asha. And Asha was carrying a 9mm Browning semi-automatic. He was waiting there. He had been at St. Peter's Square all day. They dropped him off about 9 a.m., and he was waiting till like 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, getting antsy increasingly, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock. And then finally, at a time that George Weigel, the Pope's biographer, records that's 5:13 p.m., which is interesting because it was 5:13, 1981. It was May 13th, 1981. You know, same time of day, same date on the calendar, 5:13. It was the feast day of Our Lady of Fatima. And John Paul II came around the corner. For those of you who have been to St. Peter's Square, just picture St. Peter's Square all filled up. They're getting ready for the weekly audience. And he's riding in the Pope Mobile. And he gets up, he's kissing some babies and holding some children and so forth. Everybody's cheering. And he gets to within a few yards of Asha, and Asha lifted his pistol in the air above the head of the people in front of him, and he fired four times, and he hit the Holy Father twice. John Paul just collapsed into the aides, the arms of two of his aides, including Father Zhivich, now Cardinal Zhivich, and who kind of cradled him, held him. He said, "Are you hurt? Are you hit?" And he said, "Yes." And he said, "Where?" He said, "In the stomach." He said, "Does it hurt?" He said, "Yes, it hurts." And they got him out of there as quickly as they could. They got him into an ambulance as quickly as they could. And then they had to fight through Rome traffic to even try to get to the hospital. They got to Gemelli Hospital literally just enough time. He, like Reagan, who was shot 6 weeks earlier, he should have bled to death. He really should have bled to death. Zhivich said, a few minutes longer, one traffic obstruction, one more traffic obstruction, and he would have died. You know, the bullet missed his main abdominal artery by centimeters, not unlike the bullet missed Reagan's main artery to his heart by centimeters. He needed 6 pints of blood transfused into him. Reagan needed 8, and he required 5.5 hours of surgery. Father Zhivich anointed him, gave him last rites. He said, "I didn't want to do it, but it was tearing me up inside, but I anointed him." And just before he passed out, he said to the nurse, his final words before he passed out, the Holy Father said, "How could they do it? How could they do it?" Which is a fascinating thing to say, considering that there wasn't a they who shot at him. There was just one man who shot at him. So apparently he had a hunch that that there was somebody more than Ali Asha behind that trigger.
And so what's the Soviet connection there? The Soviets said they did they see him as a threat from the very moment he was elected?
Oh, they were stunned. I mean, they were absolutely aghast. I mean, the worst possible thing that could have happened. Leonid Brezhnev was the Soviet leader at the time. Yuri Andropov was the head of the KGB at the time, and Yuri Andropov would telephone the KGB resident, the KGB chief in Warsaw. And he said to him, October 1978, "You know, how could you possibly allow the election of a citizen of a socialist country as Pope?" Right?
As if he had some control.
Right. He told Ed Dropov, he said, "I think you should direct your question to the people in Rome rather than here in Warsaw." And, you know, Andropov probably just sneered. Didn't want to hear that at all. But they were shocked, and for that matter, so was Kirill Wojtyla. He turned to Father Zhivich, and he uttered the Italian phrase, "You know, Liposino. You know, what have they done? What have they done?" and you know, Moscow wondered the same thing. And then he went out. The Holy Father gave his first Sunday homily, October 22nd, 1978, and that's when he famously said, "Be not afraid. Open the doors to Christ, open them wide, open the borders of states, political systems, you know, open them to Christ's saving power." And as he said that, of course, Moscow was very afraid. They knew that this was a mortal threat to their empire.
So both men had to convalesce. When did they first meet?
Well, they wanted to meet from the very beginning, and something I did not expect to find at the Reagan Library. I found Ronald Reagan reaching out to the Vatican and John Paul II as early as February 1981, and which is remarkable because he was inaugurated January 20th, 1981. And I even found a more surprising document. This was December 1980. Reagan had just been elected president. He was at Blair House, the transition house in Washington, and he sent a letter, a cable, congratulating Cardinal Laghi. He wasn't Cardinal Laghi yet. He would have been Archbishop Laghi, for being selected the apostolic nuncio to Washington. And Laghi said, "I got this letter from Ronald Reagan. I thought, I didn't even know he knew who I was." But Ronald Reagan was already reaching out. You know, he had said to Dick Allen in June 1979, we got to get elected, Dick. We got to reach out to the Vatican and the Pope and make them an ally. So he got elected. He beat Jimmy Carter, 44 out of 50 states, November 4th, 1980. And right away, he's reaching out to everybody who officially represents the Pope that he could, even before he was inaugurated. So they had been trying to get together. Then they're both shot, of all things. You know, that literally stopped everything in its tracks. Martial law was declared in Poland on December 13th, 1981. That, ironically, only brought the two of them closer together, at least kind of, ideologically, politically, spiritually. And then they finally were able to meet. It was June 7th, 1982. They met alone at the Vatican Library, one-on-one, for about an hour. And that's where they both said, Cy, that they believed that God had intervened to save their lives in the previous year for a special purpose, which they believed was to take down and defeat Soviet communism. And as Reagan put it, hope remains. It remains in Poland. That was Reagan saying that to the Polish Pope, to which the Polish Pope would have nodded emphatically. So that Poland was going to be, as they saw it, the dagger to the heart of the Soviet Empire.
That is an extraordinary moment to leave us with while we go to the break. And when we come back, how, in fact, did God's plan unfold in the lives of these two men, a plan to overcome the great evil, I think we said earlier, the satanic evil of communism? More on that with Dr. Paul Kengor when we come back on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live. We're here for you.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is that now there is. Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking new resource by apologist Trent Horn, that one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into or back to the practice of the Catholic faith. Don't miss out on the most important, life-changing book to come along in years. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
St. Paul's street evangelization isn't like other evangelism you might have seen on the streets. We don't yell, and we don't force anyone to pay attention to us. Instead, St. Paul's Street Evangelization is committed to presenting a positive, passionately Catholic presence to a world hungry for truth. For more information, or to start a chapter of your own, go to www.streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com. It's time to do our part.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Matthew 28:16. The 11 apostles went to Galilee, to the mountain to which Jesus had ordered them. When they saw him, he approached them and said, "All power in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you. And behold, I will be with you always until the end of the age." He told them to make disciples through sacrament and word. Notice there is no mention of the Bible here, or anywhere in Scripture for that matter. It was by word of mouth that the church began, and the direct authority he gave it. Eventually, words were written, codified, and compiled into one volume. This he left for his church to do, which it eventually accomplished. Today, he remains with the church and guides it with the same authority he gave it so long ago. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
We're not taking live calls. However, we invite you to stay with us and enjoy the broadcast. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Dr. Paul Kengor is our host, and we are remembering one of the most extraordinary times, certainly in modern history, but in the history of the world, a time that it continues in many ways. This is the 100th anniversary this year of the apparitions at Fatima, and certainly Our Lady of Fatima played an important role, an essential role in the fall of communism, both in warning the world about communism, in asking for prayers for the conversion of Russia, in apparently, at least according to the Pope himself, saving the life of the Pope on the anniversary of the first apparition at Fatima. So this is history that it remains with us and still has an enormous impact on our lives. I have to say, when I picked up the book, Dr. Kangor, it's a beautiful book. I'm just physically a beautiful book. But the picture on the cover of Reagan speaking to a very pensive-looking Pope John Paul II, it's intriguing. Like, you just immediately wonder, what do these two think of one another? What do they make of one another? Can you say something about the photo?
Yeah, I love that photo. And it's September 10th, 1987 in Miami. So this would have been the third time that the two of them met together. And when I first saw that photo a few years ago, Cy, I said, if I do a book, this has got to be on the cover. And it was, this is interesting, it was Nancy Reagan's favorite picture of the two of them. And one of Nancy Reagan's close aides told me that she was sitting with Nancy one day. This was after Ronald Reagan had died. And they were just reminiscing, looking back through old pictures, and they were looking at pictures of her husband with different world leaders. And, you know, here was Ronald Reagan with Margaret Thatcher. Here he was with, you know, the Brian Mulroney of Canada. You know, here he was with Helmut Kohl. And then all of a sudden they get to the picture of Ronald Reagan and John Paul II, that picture. And Nancy gasped, and she said, oh, she said, my favorite. And her aide, Joanne Drake, said, what's your favorite? She said, well, he was my favorite leader, and that's my favorite picture of them. Because she said, Ronnie is saying something very earnestly, and the Pope is just sort of real pensive. He's listening to Ronnie. She said, clearly he's saying something important. And I've had people who have known the two of them, usually knew them apart, very few people who knew them together, and they've said that actually typifies the relationship really well, because the Pope tended to listen, and Ronald Reagan would be speaking a little bit more. And it's also interesting because Reagan, not being Catholic, he had the greatest respect for John Paul II. I mean, the highest praise I've ever heard Reagan say for anybody was what he said for John Paul II. But yet, because he wasn't Catholic, he wasn't in awe of the Pope in a way that a Catholic would be, where a Catholic would almost not be able to talk around him, right? So for Reagan, it was more of a relationship of equals, although Reagan would have never considered himself John Paul's equal. But they got along, I think, more as partners. And I think John Paul II probably really liked that. That picture sort of captures it.
And I have to say, there's a kind of intense manliness to the picture, too. These both look like very serious men. They're not fooling around. And okay, so they meet in 82, you said.
That's right. Yeah, June 1982. So it was about almost exactly 35 years ago. So that was the first time out of five times that they would meet between 1982 and 1990.
And within seven, certainly 8 years of their meeting, it's over. I mean, for all intents and purposes. So what happened? This is more than anything else. I would like it if you, and please take as much time as you want. What happened in those 7 years from a time where everything, the world looked to be in a solid state? It was locked in a battle of two maybe, immovable forces. But that's not how it played out. Within 7 years, it's over. How did it happen?
Well, what happened is an enormous amount, right? I mean, there's a lot and probably too much to summarize, but I think one of the quotes that captures it best was what one of the cardinals said after that first meeting, June 7th, 1982. And this is really an amazing quote, Cy, if you think about it. He said, quote, "Nobody believed the collapse of communism would happen this fast or in this timetable, but in their first meeting, the Holy Father and President committed themselves in the institutions of the church in America to such a goal. And from that day, the focus was to bring it about," unquote. So the very fact that these two thought they could do this, when, as you said earlier, nobody else was thinking that the communism was about to collapse, and that in that first meeting, they would commit themselves and their institutions of the church in America to that goal, and from that day to bring it about, that's pretty profound. So it would operate on so many different levels, and really it sounds almost cheap to just say I can't summarize it, but I can. But I'd say if anything, the crucible was Poland more than anything else. They believed that if they could sustain, keep alive the solidarity movement in Poland, that Poland could be the linchpin to crack the entire communist bloc. So martial law was declared in Poland December 13, 1981, where the Polish communist government, under orders from the Kremlin, the Soviet Union, tried to ban Solidarity. They tried to end Solidarity. They threw Solidarity members in prison. They persecuted Lech Walesa and other Solidarity members. And Reagan and the Pope believed that if, among so many other things, they could just keep Solidarity alive, that could be the wedge to split the whole empire. And to make a long story short, eventually they succeeded in doing that to the point where the Polish communist government, consenting to, with Moscow giving the go-ahead under Gorbachev, allowed for free and fair elections in Poland in June 1989. And when they did, the Solidarity members won every single seat. The communists didn't win a single – the communists lost 100 out of 100 seats. And as Gorbachev himself said, when those elections happened in Poland, I knew that the whole thing was over. And it was those elections in Poland in June 1989 that precipitated, and I think prompted, the breach in the Berlin Wall that led to the wider collapse of communism in Eastern Europe later that fall of 1989.
And so maybe you could say something about the Pope's visits to Poland. So, and it is a strategic, I mean, you can say, I mean, it's very hard. You almost have to work not to see the hand of the Lord in the election of Pope John Paul II in so many ways, but in particularly in this context. I mean, he's a man who comes from the very crux of the matter, you know, the crisis point where all this would have to take place. But what about Pope John Paul II's visits to Poland? How important were they to the collapse of the whole Soviet structure?
Yeah, it was huge. And I mean, none were more important than that first one in June 1979. But others were too. People forget about the 1983 visit, which was really pivotal as well. But that first one in 1979, and here too, the Soviets were apoplectic. Leonid Brezhnev, who I mentioned earlier, the head of the KGB, Yuri Andropov, phoning the KGB Resonaut in Warsaw when the Holy Father was picked in October of 78. But in June 1979, Leonid Brezhnev, who was the leader in the Soviet Union, he called Edward Gierek, his communist puppet in Poland, and he said, "You tell this new pope that he's not allowed to come." And Gierek said, "How can I not receive a Polish pope?"
Yeah.
He said, "Yeah, but the vast majority of my countrymen are Catholics. Like, literally, you know, 90% of Poles were Catholic." And Brezhnev actually told him, Cy, we now have the transcript of this. He said, "Tell the Pope that he can announce that he's gotten sick, that he's taken ill, that he can't come." And Gierek's like, "Well, how long can we use that excuse?"
Yeah.
Right? It'd be like 27 years, right? "I'm not feeling well. I have a headache."
Yeah.
So Brezhnev barked at him. He said, Gomulka, the previous communist leader, he was a better communist than you, and he slammed down the phone.
Yeah.
And John Paul II, and this is a sign of how important courage is, he said, "They don't want me to come to Poland? Too bad. I'm going to Poland."
Yeah.
If you don't like it, you could complain all you want. I'm going to Poland, and right, you're not going to stop me. And by not stopping him, they couldn't stop the unraveling of the communist bloc.
Such an extraordinary story. And really, we have to give so much credit to the Polish people themselves that they never lost their Catholic faith under that great oppression for decade after decade. It was they who maintained their Catholic faith, and it was that Catholic faith erupting that brought down the Soviet Union. I mentioned Fatima at the beginning of this segment. Ronald Reagan was a Protestant himself. Did he know that these things that were part of Fatima, did he have any understanding of what Fatima was?
Well, that's what surprised me the most, I think, in all of this research. And, you know, I use the phrase untold, extraordinary story, but these things are untold. They are extraordinary. In fact, I embarrassingly, I've got to admit, when I did my first book, Big Book, God and Ronald Reagan, which came out in 2004, I didn't know any of this. I had no idea that Reagan even knew what Fatima was. But I started learning over time, here in 2005 and again 2007, again 2009. I mean, I was learning new things up until about a year ago. Frank Shakespeare, Reagan's second ambassador to the Vatican, who before that had been ambassador to Portugal, told me about giving Reagan a full one-on-one briefing on Fatima in June 1987. That was before Reagan's second meeting with the Holy Father. I found a speech that this was not reported on at the time. May 9th, 1985, Reagan went to Portugal and talked about Fatima in a speech to the Portuguese assembly. So those are just a few of many examples. Reagan knew about Fatima.
A Pope and a President is the book. John Paul II, Ronald Reagan, and the Extraordinary Untold Story of the 20th Century. Dr. Paul Kingor is its author. Dr. Kingor, thank you so much for being with us today on Catholic Answers Live.
Oh, sure, Si. Anytime. I love your show.
Thank you to all of our listeners as well. We'll see you next time on Catholic Answers Live.